saam met ons op die verhoog is meneer Jean Engelbrecht van die plaas Rust en Vrede. Wat nou al 315 jaar aan die gang is. En aan die inligting wat ek hier het sê, through centuries there were periods when wine was produced, but for the last 57 years, the Engelbrecht family have specialized in producing only red wine with a focus on Shiraz, Cabernet and Merlot. Many accolades have been bestowed upon the estate, and some of the more memorable were when Rust en Vrede was chosen by the late President Nelson Mandela to be served at the Nobel Peace Prize dinner and hosting the Queen of Denmark for a lunch with the Engelbrecht family at the Manor House. Rust en Vrede was nominated as the first South African red wine in the top 100 wines of the world and repeated this achievement for 4 consecutive years. Today, Rust en Vrede continues to be a fine example of what Stellenbosch is all about and will strive to be a driving force in promoting South African wines, the wines of the region, and ultimately promoting the country. You are all, according to this, welcome to Rust en Vrede, and on behalf of the Engelbrecht family and colleagues, they are looking forward to you visiting. I believe it's quite an experience for you to visit this farm and also enjoy its culinary offerings. Then Dr. Johannes Moller.
Nee, ek was hier op universiteit, maar wou nie van jou dokter
vraag. He's the president of Agri South Africa, a South African Agricultural Industry Association. It is a federal organization promoting the interests of its members, which it identifies as the sustainable profitability and stability of commercial agriculture producers and agribusinesses through the involvement and input in various national and international policy-making fora. It represents more than 70,000 small and large-scale commercial farmers. The different focus areas each have a different convenience. There's a whole host of focus areas which I'm not going to mention. But Mr. Moller is the convener of the Environmental Affairs Focus Committee within Agri SA. Welcome, sir.
Thank you.
Minister Nkwinti is a South African politician currently serving in the Cabinet of South Africa as a Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. He holds a diploma in nursing in the field of psychiatry, as well as a bachelor's degree in political science, public administration, and applied economics from UNISA, 1972 to 1984. From 1972 to 1984, he worked as a professional nurse, and from 1984 to 1989, he worked for the United Democratic Front in the Eastern Cape. And he also worked as a research assistant in the Department of Psychology at Rhodes University. From 1990 to 1991, he served as the UDF and ANC Regional Secretary in the Eastern Cape. In 1994, he became the Speaker of the Eastern Cape Affairs in the province. 2004 saw him holding on to his position as MEC for Housing and Local Government. And in 2009, he was appointed as Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform. Nou, ek hoef nie hier te herhaal hoe 'n komplekse situasie die hele kwestie van landelike ontwikkeling en grondhervorming vir ons is nie. En mense het soms glad nie hoop dat dit uitdagings is wat die land ooit te bowe sal kom, as jy luister na hoe die verskillende rolspelers in die omgeving oor die kwestie met mekaar in gesprek tree of op mekaar skel. Now the idea is that tonight we'll hear the minister share his views as to how these challenges can be quickly overcome and sorted out. And then the other two gentlemen will weigh in with their own particular views on these challenges. So without further ado, Minister Nkunti.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Press, thanks. Ms. Engelbrecht is a... I'm happy I'm sitting next to him here. I've got a long-time hero in rugby. I just asked him, I heard his Engelbrecht, and I asked him, what happened to Jan Engelbrecht? He used to be a very good Springbok wing. Came from this area. I said, he's my father. So I'm very, very happy. I really am. I didn't know he's still alive. My apologies for arriving late. The president was answering questions in the house. The first 2 hours was spent on other things. And then he started answering at 4:15. So it would have been discourteous of us to leave. We just said to sit and listen until the end of the discussion. At least it did end. And I'm here now. Thanks very much for inviting me. I came to Stellenbosch, met with Stellenbosch farmers a while ago, I think 2010 or so. And what we were discussing at the time was the what government said was the target for 2014. 30% of land would have been transferred by 2014. The farmer said to me, you know, just reconsider this thing. I said, what do you think I should do? They said, rather focus on the land that has been transferred. And your target should rather be that you want to turn these farms, which were transferred from one group to the other, to 100% productivity. And indeed, that has become one of two strategic objectives of the department. I got it from farmers here, and then I just dropped this thing of 30% by 2040. By 30% by 2014. So I have faith in consultation with farmers, 100% faith in that. I think even now, I hope that by the end of March, press, that will come to some kind of understanding with farmers. It's very important to do so because we've got two very important reasons for doing that. Firstly, is to hear the views of people who are experienced in agricultural development in the country. I'm saying agricultural development deliberately rather than commercial farming, etc. Talking about a broader concept, as you would know. So remember that we have to deal with the question of what do we do with the rest of South Africans who, until very recently, were denied deliberately the opportunity to become farmers. Now we have to deal with that question, but in doing so we have also to balance that out with ensuring that food security, in other words, that in addressing one thing you don't want to land into another thing which was never intended in the first place. So consultation helps in that. So we are here now because we thought we have introduced very thorny policy proposals, and farmers need to hear us out now. One, We said press the 50-50 policy framework. The National Development Plan talks about 20% over the next 15 years transferred through the District Land Reform Committees managing that. That's a good idea. So that's a range. The 50-50 is a proposal that we came to after asking farmers again. Perhaps it was a bit of a blind faith as well. Blind faith, because we had asked farmers when we came in 2009 to come up with a set of economic variables which we could use to deal with the question of redistribution of land in our country, talking agricultural land. It didn't happen. And because I had said, I don't want to use political variables or criteria for determining the path moving forward. So I asked them. Press is aware of that. Then the term, towards the end of the term, I then said, because the point was one, big one. I have a mandate from the governing party to introduce a policy which limits the extent of holding, the so-called ceilings, for small-scale commercial viable farm, medium-scale commercial viable farm, and large-scale. So these three categories, I could not use political criteria to determine that. I needed to be assisted. I still do. I needed to be assisted by people who know, because they've been there, farmers. How do we reach that those determinations in terms of the three categories? Using economic variables, not political criteria. Because if I were to do it on my own, I would do so. I would simply go to the Freedom Charter. Land belongs to all who work it. Land belongs to those who work it. I'll go to that, because that's an easy thing to do. And then go on and on and on that. However, the reality is that Northern Cape is different to Southern Cape, etc. Not only in terms of the geography or geographic landscape or climatic conditions or even the commodities, etc. Various ways, in a lot of ways, some cultural differences, everything that's there that should be taken into account as a set of variables to be used to determine small-scale medium scale, large scale. So when they didn't do that, I said, fine, I'll go to the Freedom Charter and then make those determinations on the basis of what the Freedom Charter says. And I know best on that one, because that's political. It's more political than economic. So I worked out, came up with a 50-50 proposal based on the number of years people worked on the farm, whether 50 years, 25 years, whatever. Did that. And I put it there. I said, that's it. That's what I've done. You failed me. You didn't do that. So that's what I mean by blind faith. I had thought they would do it. However, I attended the Congress of AgriSA last year. I was shocked by what they were presenting there as policy proposals for land reform. I had prepared a speech, and I went there. I didn't have to read my speech. I simply said, I accept what they're saying as a very good basis for engagement, so that all of us, we must be satisfied when we say we've reached the point where this is a set of policy proposals for redistributing land in South Africa. Yes, we won't agree with everything, or rather on everything, all the time, but there will be a good basis for us to then say we're making progress on this, we're not making progress there, we're making progress there, so that all of us as South Africans could proudly say we've moved a great deal over this period. But lastly, there are non-South African nationals who have contributed to the development of the agricultural sector in our country. They're here. They too have got a responsibility to making a contribution to the transformation of our country. They should not, it should not be seen as singling them out because they are. No. The mandate I have is that non-South African nationals should not be eligible for, should not own land, let's put it that way, should not own land in the country, but rather should be eligible for long-term lease with a minimum of 30 years and moving up, but a minimum of 30 years. So those are the thorny policy proposals I'm carrying and I'm putting to you now. So that's what we're working. Therefore, we're working on a regulation of land, agricultural land holdings bill right now. But I'm going to present that on the 20th to the farmers, on the 20th, because we've got a land reform in Durban. I'm presenting that to them and the other policy-related matters that have to do with what I've just said. And then we engage. We're moving towards the end of March when we will want to hear fully, finally, what is it that we are saying as a country. That's why I'm here. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Minister. Now, Mr. Moller, the meeting the Minister refers to of AgriSA, where he had to put his speech, prepared speech aside because of what he heard from AgriSA, that created quite a lot of media excitement. What did you say to the Minister? Can you elaborate a little bit on what the plans were?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Facilitator. I think, Minister, I think you took a few shortcuts in your in your presentation. What actually happened is for a long time, it's not as if we didn't make any policy proposals, but our view was that land reform should be done by government. Government should buy the land, transfer it, and we will support it. We support it from the viewpoint of after 1994, we expected all South Africans to participate in the economy and to have access to all resources, including agricultural land, water, and so on. And that should actually have aided the economy to grow a lot faster than what happened after 1994. For us, it was the economic side of things was just a big disappointment. Because we thought, you know, if 5 or 10 times as many people have access to resources, then the economy can grow a lot faster than it did. So what we proposed to the Minister for all that time is buy the land, transfer it, and we will help with the development of new farmers. And we've done that through our commodity organizations, which is part of Agri-South Africa. But then the Minister, as he quite rightly said no, the sector must take charge and the sector must participate. So then we moved on to the Green Paper on land reform and rural development. And we participated in the so-called NAREG process, the National Reference Group process, and we said to the Minister, we can't make policy proposals from the sector if we don't have the Green Paper in place. If we don't know what the national policy on land reform and agriculture and rural development will look like. So we participated in that in each and every one of those fora. And we went to the minister and said this is a very expensive process. Everybody in organized agriculture will not be able to participate in this process. After that, we went to the governing party, we made the same statement to them and to the Progressive Business Forum, and said, our fear is that after this process has been concluded, that some of the organizations will say we simply couldn't afford to participate to a satisfactory level in this. And that's why we only formulated our changed or new approach at last year's Congress. And it took a lot of work. After we said, okay, we have adequate clarity on where the green paper is heading. Even now, there's not 100% clarity on how implementation of the green paper will look eventually. But we accept it. The time has now come to start formulating a policy on how the sector will participate in land reform. And we still support land reform. There's no question about that. AgriSA support land reform. We even support government and say that the current distribution of land did not come about without government intervening in the process. So we can't just leave it to the market. We accept that as well. But as you quite rightly said, production must be maintained, food security must be at an adequate level. You know, the latest figures was that South Africa on a 1 to 100 scale, the developed countries is about 70 to 80 points that they score. The rest of Africa score below 40, and South Africa scores about 61 on the DuPont scale of food security. And that's why we started working. And as you also quite rightly pointed out, and the week before last, we had a discussion with the Secretary General of the governing party. And he said, but you must realize that land is a very emotional issue. As if it isn't a very emotional issue for everybody. I'm a farmer, you know, and that's why in June of last year, I decided quite autocratically that the technical work should be done by people who doesn't own land. That was the way that we took emotion out of our approach. And I think it worked very well. I think they're collaborating with our technical task team, with your interdepartmental task team. And I am reading the reports, and I'm quite positive about the work that they're doing and the progress that they're making at the moment. But we decided, you know, we always test policy and policy proposals that we make to government at three levels. The first one is, you know, it must be done within the ambit of current laws, any policy proposals that we make. So we want to make sure that the proposals that we make is at least constitutional, but also ties in with other acts and laws like, for example, the broad-based black economic empowerment law. The second one is we want to make sure that policy is economically viable. In other words, the economic viability of the sector must be maintained. And thirdly, and that's what you also appreciated, is that it must also be socially responsible. And that's what we said in our policy proposals. It must make economic sense. That means that people, farmers and new landowners, mustn't be forced by law into new processes, and it must be constitutional. It must make economic sense. Farmers are business people. If you make the process voluntary and you incentivize it and you monitor it, they will do it by themselves. And that's a much better approach than forcing them in a certain direction, where people might say, no, it's no longer worthwhile, and I'm moving out of this sector. That will be a failure for the whole of South Africa, not just the agricultural sector. And I also think, you know, that socially, we've got to develop the rural areas. South Africans are urbanizing at the rate of 600,000 per year, and it's going to continue for at least the next 10 years, maybe a lot longer than that. That in itself is a challenge, and the reason why we should get land reform and rural development right. So we also said, let's take race out of this. You know, and if you want to transfer land from white people to black people. That's quite a challenging principle to say, let's take race out of it. But it simply means that if you incentivize it enough, we already have literally thousands of successful black farmers. If you incentivize that enough, they can grow their enterprises and draw in more people, more black people, let's call it by the name, to become successful farmers. And I think that's a much better approach than to say, you know, it's simply something that must be done by white farmers. We said it must make economic sense. So we're trying to move it from the ideological base to something that makes economic sense, where we can grow agriculture, grow it in the communal areas and so on. We're opposed to the 50-50 proposal. I think there's, within the framework that we developed and that I explained in very, very short, the framework also encompasses and foresee a special purpose vehicle that must be created, and the function of the special purpose vehicle will be that that of financing, of incentivizing, of monitoring, and creating an ideas bank on how we should progress. We've progressed quite far with the ideas bank, and we will be presenting, although it will still be to a limited extent, the ideas bank on how to go about it. We on the social side, we've done a few pilot projects during the past year, and we've had very, very good results. For me, the eye-opener was that the problem of unemployment in South Africa, in my view, is much more a problem of people being unemployable than a question of a lack of opportunities to be unemployed. Because the people that we've employed or educated and trained over the last year have all been employed before they even finished the course and obtained the diploma. And that, you know, showed for me that... That's the problem, and that's probably where the solution to rural development also lies. So that's why we proposed this framework. We've done a lot of work, and we will be able to present a much more developed framework by the 20th of March. Even here in the Western Cape, since October, we've seen a number of developments on land reform. Hortgrow just this morning presented to me their new initiative in the fruit industry, where they want to create 5,000 new jobs, basically small new farmers. And they're investing something like 500 million rand from the fruit industry in there. So the accusation that we haven't done anything in the past and that we're not doing anything now isn't true. We might not have been doing enough. But then let's speed up the process. Even when we spoke to the Secretary General, he said, but this shouldn't be voluntary. It should be encompassed in an act, and people should be forced to do the right things. But the examples that they had there of successful land reform and successful new farmers all met these two criteria. All of them were voluntary, and they were incentivized. And just as a last remark, Mr. Jeffries pointed out quite rightly that we have more than 70,000 members, especially through our commodity organizations. There are only about 36,000 commercial farmers in South Africa. 20,000 of them are our members, and the rest obviously are not white commercial farmers. So we are no longer, AgriSA is no longer a white organization. To a certain extent, we've never been one, but let's leave that argument. At least we can say now we are no longer a white farmers organization.
Isn't the issue of trust a big stumbling block?
Of course, it's a stumbling block in the whole of South Africa. But we've got we also have a program through which we build trust. Trust must be built and earned. And you've got to measure progress. Otherwise, you'll never build trust. You've got to say, these are our goals. Where are we now? And you've got to have conflict resolution
processes, because somewhere along the line you're going to differ. And we've differed a lot with the minister. The minister said, I'm not his friend. I only represent AgriSA. I'll never be his friend. But even so, we kept on speaking, and we've always been friendly.
We are friends.
I really appreciate the
don't hide that.
I really appreciate the minister's pragmatic approach. He'll force things in a certain direction, but we've always experienced him as being pragmatic, and I think this will, from the 20th of March going forward, this will also be the case, and I hope that will be the case.
Minister, do you think progress is possible on the front of trust? You are also exposed to other political forces and formations within the governing alliance, and some of your alliance partners have got very strong views on the issue of whether to trust that the farmers in the country, let's call it the white farmers, are sufficiently committed to want to resolve the problem of land reform and ownership.
Well, my biggest problem is not those forces. My biggest problem is Luthuli House. led by the Secretary General Gwede Mandashe. He does not agree with me. He was public on it. I don't agree with this 50-50. He was the first to phone that Sunday morning, I remember very well. So what is this? So these are farmers there. They in the typical ANC situation, they're very pragmatic. Last week on Thursday, I think it's last week Thursday, the farmers went there, including John Pages. They went, they met with them. Before they met me the following day, Friday, they went to Luthuli. I think they trust Luthuli more than they do me. So that's my biggest problem, is Luthuli. The second problem is, I'm talking this trust question. The second problem is not, you know, the people we often think are would go wayward or too much to the left are the problem people. They are very conservative. They didn't, I still think they don't support fully the proposals that have introduced. Press has a sense of this. They don't. I pushed hard to get the Lekgotla, because the Lekgotla is broad. Push hard to get the Lekgotla to accept the proposals. So those people are not the problem. The problem for me is neither is a group of youngsters who just come through and form a party and left the ANC and so on. That's not the problem, really. The real problem is our lack of courage, all of us collectively, to come up with something that would be regarded as sufficiently radical to stem away, to stem off the rest of the kind of anarchy that's coming through. If we could have a common agenda on that, we can overcome anything. Because in the ANC, they're conservative enough to want to not to mess up with the economy, not to mess up with the particularly the agricultural sector is regarded in the ANC very seriously. So I'm very, very confident that with the president of the ANC now in the country, the Secretary General who's leading with the president, those people are very pragmatic in the manner in which they see things. They themselves farmers. So the trust issue is no longer for me. I think that deficit is really, really. Press is press, and that's it. You know, the president of AgriSA is my president of AgriSA. I regard him like that. the other Johan and them, we all of them working very closely. When they disagree with me, it's like we've known one another for the last 50 years. They just disagree. I mean, there was the deputy president, Dr. Diakhar. He was very robust. But still today, we've come to understand each other. We working very closely. We disagree. But we are, short of saying we are friends, we understand each other very well. I will disagree with them on the 20th if they come up with something that is not right. They will disagree with me. I have no illusions about that. But trust, I do trust them. I do. I'm serious about it.
Mr. Engelbrecht, you want to weigh in?
I think, Mr. Minister, that everybody is in agreement that agriculture is a national asset. And in the agricultural circus circuits where I am active in, I know for a fact that most farmers are supportive of land redistribution. Getting to the right answer on how we do it has brought about all the different forums and meetings that where you and Johannes especially meet each other so often. I think that one of the problems we have in agriculture in trying to move forward and trying to solve the problems that we are staring in the face, on both sides, that is of agriculture and sometimes, I wouldn't say government, but let's say politicians. We all have elements, unfortunately, that make statements that gets the wrong message get out, and emotions take over. And I think that history has proved that where emotions take over, very seldom a problem is solved. I also think that it is every farmer in this country, it is his duty to ask himself the question whether he is positive and committed to the country. In my humble view, if he's not, maybe he shouldn't be in agriculture. Agriculture, it is not the first time that there are uncertainties in agriculture. We always have uncertainties, whether it's by nature, whether it's by the government of the day. This is not something new. So I don't think it's relevant to say, well, we have all these uncertainties and therefore I don't know whether I am committed to the country. So farmers must answer that question to themselves. And if they're not committed, they should maybe get out of agriculture. I also believe that in order to move forward, and I certainly don't have all the answers, but agriculture must realize that we will have to sit with the government of the day to move forward. These answers are not going to come from agriculture alone. And as the minister has pointed out, the government has said many years ago to agriculture, well, you come up with an answer. I don't think that's going to work either. I think that with the Constitution as a guideline, agriculture and government should go hand in hand to try and solve the problem and move forward. And we should get rid of elements in both groups that has either hidden agendas or make statements for cheap political capital. Because as I said in the beginning, this is a national asset. And if agriculture doesn't work, it goes way beyond any color. The country suffers, every citizen of this country suffers, and we have no other option than to make agriculture work. And we can only make it work if all the role players who are committed and positive stand together, talk about it, and try and solve the problems ahead.
Are you satisfied that, given what the Minister said and what Mr. Moller said just now, that we're at a point where we can take this forward in a in a progressive manner.
I think the steps that have been taken in the last 6 months, 7 months, has been some of the best steps for agriculture with working together with government. It is, I think it is no secret, and definitely my perception and experience, that prior to that, the previous 3 years or so, unfortunately, a lot of damage was done not only to agriculture but to relationships between government and agriculture. And agriculture is like any other sector in the country. If we are not willing to walk the path with government, we are going one step forward and two steps back. That doesn't mean that every person that's participating or institution that participates needs to walk with a stick, because I think that is a big problem.
Okay. I want to throw it open to the floor now. Please just show your hand if you want to make a comment or ask a question. And please just introduce yourself, and then we'll take it from there. There's a roving mic. Okay, can I see any hands there? The left.
My name is Klaus Parkendorp, and I've been associated with agricultural research for more than 50 years. And I think the big problem that we experience now is to get the emotion out of everything and things that every guy can go and farm. It's just a thing you just have to put down the seed or plant something and it grows. It doesn't work that way. This morning they had a discussion on innovation in South Africa, and South African agriculture was mentioned as one of the top innovators in terms of technological innovation. I think what we need is a damn good training program before we think about giving land to farmers. In America, after the Second World War, after the First World War, they had the land-grant colleges where they trained guys who came back from the army before they went farming. Our agricultural colleges have virtually collapsed. I don't think there's a training place for aspiring farmers. And I think before we talk about land, before we talk about tractors and equipment which is standing around, we should talk about training and getting people to know what they're going to do before they get to the farm. That's the only way we can work. Thank you.
Someone else?
Mr. Minister, my birth is in America. I'm a farmer in Worcester. I'm involved in wine, fruit, and dairy. Maybe my figures, I'm not involved in anymore in agricultural, the type of things Mr. Mollerenham does, but I want to make a statement and just tell me if I'm wrong, Mr. Mollerenham. First of all, when we talk about food security, are we only talking the grains? What's the position of that you speak about maintaining production? So would we look at wine production and fruit production as food production? But now, as far as wine fruit is concerned, I'm giving you these figures and I'm pretty sure they're right. Citrus, we're the second biggest exporter. In wine, half of our crop. In deciduous fruit, the rest of it, we, I think, the biggest. And the tendency amongst farmers is that the smaller growers cannot keep it up. Mm. The economics go against them. It's a scale economy. Now, very difficult for me to see small scale farmers coming in into a tendency that worldwide farmers are going bigger. It's a difficult. I don't know. Of course, whatever I see, you see in the Western Cape, the big groups are. And when you ask them why, they say it's the only way we can stay competitive. If we land a product in the world market, They don't ask us, what's your social problem? They say, I want value for money. And to maintain that level, we've got to be competitive. We can't fool around. It's economics that play a role. And, I think it is a very difficult job. You put your head into, in Afrikaans we say, into a beehive. And we, as Mr. Muller says, everybody's supporting you. We want people to be happy. But I'm telling you, there isn't a lot of profit made on the farms. If you take the capital involved, in fact, if I see the graphs of the total value of agricultural land and the total debt on the land, South African farmers are bankrupt. Now, how are we going to handle it? I'm telling you, you must go and take the Bible and call Solomon to come and help us.
Any other questions or comments from the floor over here on the right? Thank you.
Panel, my name is Jan Bierman. I practice as an advocate, amongst other things, on land reform. I think we are honored to have the minister here tonight. There seems to be pressure from the ANC on land reform. But what does seem like a big omission, and a bit strange, is that vast tracts of land in the former homelands have not been transferred, which could have been done 20 years ago already. The problem seems to be the traditional leaders who are against it, apparently, and the ANC government has recently strengthened the position of the traditional leaders there. So it seems as if the ANC is working against its own model of land reform. That's my first comment. The second comment is, again, the pressure is from the ANC on land reform, then one would expect a much bigger need for black agricultural schools, black colleges, and black university bursaries. And I'm not aware to what extent that is really the case. Thank you.
Anasi, you want to respond?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Let me start with the last speaker. Yes. This morning, or yesterday, or it could be this morning, I work with that team sitting there. I asked them to approach the University of the Free State for short courses of 6 months training, because we don't have many people who are trained. I want young people to go and get training on agricultural project management. So we want to try and get them into the to start working, young guys to start working there. But I will be looking for farmers to adopt them, to intern them. Because if we don't do that, again, it has to do with this training that the dog's talking about there. If we don't do that, Mandashe is a realist. You see, Mandashe said, you know, we made a mistake when we started in 1994. We thought we could create farmers because people are poor, unemployed, who could turn them into farmers. It just doesn't work. Don't do it. So of course, the people get land and forest institution, there are many. But we're trying to avoid the situation now that we're trying to move more towards this individual getting land than a group of people. Because it doesn't work. Because some people are really not farmers. We want to make them farmers just because they are unemployed. Yet we have no provision for training. So I've asked them to do that. I want to, because the reason I chose Free State is that I've got some understanding that Free State teaches rural development. So, secondly, because we have acquired the old Stratum Teacher Training College for young people, I want us to train young people. So that's why I chose that university. I hope over the next 5-10 years there would be some results. But farmers would have, we would also have to get farmers who are willing to intend them, train them on farming. So they wake up like farmers would do at 4 o'clock and do work, and only sleep another sometime around midnight. Because they don't know that. Youngsters don't know that. They don't have that culture of work. So for me, that training is very important. I hope that we will agree. I'm going to Tamanchu, to the college on Sunday, to talk to the young people there, about 1,000 of them. We'll see how it turns out. The second thing is that, no, this thing about traditional leaders, I keep hearing this. Yesterday also I had traditional leaders talk about this thing. The problem we're having is that we have not had a program. Yes, we have something called post-settlement support grant and so on, or land reform, transferring land. Until 2009, there hasn't been a program of developing the land acquired. Until 2009. So, we started this thing we call Recapitalization and Development Program. We introduced therefore the development aspect of it, of land reform now, and working with farmers. Lots of commercial farmers are assisting us. A lot of them. But 700 and something are assisting. Also exploiting us, but that's the price you pay. We do have them, and some of the farmers that they are training are actually very good farmers now. So I don't intend moving away from that. We met with farmers a couple of months ago because we wanted to correct this problem, because it creates a bad perception out there that the farmers are just interested in taking the money and not doing much, etc. It's not really true. Some of them, yes, but it's not the majority of the commercial farmers are assisting us. So we're doing that. The communal land, we've developed this program now, and we hope the commercial farmers will assist us here. Because what we want to do is to create a market there. Part of the incentivization would have to do create market conditions in the initial of the districts. We're setting aside 2 billion rands for them from the next financial year, April, this coming one. 2 billion rands for this program. For the 27 poorest districts. Because that's where your homeland land that's lying fallow is. You find it there, but we have to create these conditions. And I want to appeal to commercial farmers. I will do that on Saturday. I mean, on the 20th. That's what the technical team is working on that already. We want to go there, all of us, not just government. You know, Mr. Engelbrecht is right here. Not just government. The press is right as well. All of us, let's find a way. Once we did OPAC, we must do it that way. If we don't do it that way, again, it's not going to work well. I know when we had the discussion last Friday with John and the team, they presented and said, we said to them, look, yes, this is the way we're going, but at the same time, let's find a way of moving into that space. Traditional leaders themselves, they don't know what to do, by the way. They really have a big problem, because the people are starving and they're moving to the townships. They're leaving the land. And young people don't have the culture of hard work. That's why we this program was taken about of young people. We're working with the Defence Force. We take them for 3.5 months with the Defence Force. Saldana here and Trisa in Kimberley. Just for them to change the mindset. And understand that, you know, you wake up early in the morning, you even make your bed and polish your shoes. So it's actually working. So these are the youngsters who are training, and we take them to FET colleges, train them in agricultural production. That's why the university is going to be very important for us, the University of the Free State. We want to train these youngsters to work. We take them from the villages where, in fact, they were from the former homeland areas, in order for us to send them back there to do work there. And they're starting to work there. It's very good. Some of the traditional leaders have given these youngsters land, and they're producing on the land. It's working. But we need commercial farmers to intend them. So we wonder, that's part of what we'll be presenting on the 20th, that here is it. The land will be made available, the youngsters are there, intend them, we'll get them training as well through the university, as I say. I hope the University of Free State will cut out a program for us. Dada? Yeah, man. This problem you're putting to us here is a big problem. Competitiveness. This is a challenge we're faced with, and I just want to appeal again. The old farmers, irrespective of the color of their skin, just intend young people. Train them how to be successful farmers, so that as we give them the land, they know what to do with the land. They don't know right now. And the old people are very enthusiastic. But they can't manage a farm. Yes, they worked on the farm for the rest of the day. Somebody says, I've been working on the farm for the rest of my life. That's fine. But it's a different thing to manage a farm. It's one other thing to work under supervision. This is the kind of Rubicon we should cross. Training people to manage the farms. Commercial farmers do that. Intend, take them in, train them, and mentor them. When you have farms, the Free State farmers have done a wonderful thing. The three groups there, they said, look, buy these farms next to our farms. We have already created workers' trusts. Buy this farm. Then we'll create a company with them. They will be majority shareholders, we'll be the minority shareholders. But we'll train them on their farms, which we will together be running as a business. So we bought already three farms in the Free State on this, because they said we can do this thing. I bought these farms last month. And I hope things are going to work well. I really like what I saw in Stellenbosch. They called us there. They also, Ceres rather, not Stellenbosch, Ceres. They say, look, here's land, 50 hectares, 90 hectares, the other one is 1,063 hectares. These are the farmers who say, all we want from you is just enhance the capacity of our dams. So we could then open up. And this 50% will be these guys who work here, and this 90%, rather 90 hectares, sorry, 50 hectares, 90 hectares, etc. So we're looking for those success. This is a beautiful story for our country, as far as I'm concerned. I learned at Stellenbosch that 38 Stellenbosch farmers who want to engage with us on this matter as well. I hope they are here. I'm ready to engage them whenever it's possible. Training, yes, I've covered that, ma'am.
Meneer Moller, kan dit na lewensvatbare uitweg?
Yes, I think so, but let me just, you know, it's not just the technology. We need research. Research, agricultural research at the moment is completely underfunded. We can't hope to stay competitive if we don't do adequate research in agriculture. So that's got to change, and it's got to change rapidly. And training, of course, and extension. You don't just need a mentor. You need a professional extension officer as well, who knows what he's doing and doesn't have any connection to other farms or whatever. He's completely impartial, he's professional, and who can assist new farmers and current ones. With the South Africa employs some of the best technology in agriculture in the world. And that's why we stay competitive. Mm. But it must be based on research and extension and education as well. If you don't have that, you're going to lose your competitiveness. And in terms of the competitiveness and the size of farms, the figure that's now being kicked around of 135 mega farmers producing 70% of agricultural output is just incorrect. It's completely incorrect. Mm. I think I know where it comes from, but it's still incorrect. You don't have to believe it any longer than tonight, Minister. There's about nine. We've done a survey, a professional survey now again, to get the correct figures. There's about 9,000 farmers who produce about 80% of agricultural output. The rest, the other 28,000 so-called commercial farmers are actually micro-enterprises. They've got gross incomes of somewhere between 500,000 and up to a maximum of 10 million rand a year turnover. So they're micro-enterprises. You know, and coupled to a debt level of 63% of fixed assets, they simply don't have the capacity to go into a 50-50 shareholding scheme. So we've got to take that into account. It's not just the mega farmers. We've got we call them commercial farmers, but they're actually really micro enterprises. And we've got to take that into account as well. And that's why I told you right at the outset, when we started discussing these things, you'll probably remember, because you made a note of it, that one size in agriculture will never fit all. Mm. And that's why in our framework, we said land reform should be based on individual business plans for each and every farm that's being transferred. And that will keep us competitive. If we base it on business, on a business approach and on business plans for every farm that we transfer, and then we've got training going into the new farmers, extension officers, research, and etc., and the mentor, then you'll get the recipe right. But it must be done on an individual basis. And that's why the idea bank within the special purpose vehicle is so important. But as you go along, you'll find what models work. And we can't describe one model right from the outside. I mean, that's setting up the whole sector for failure. If we don't get that right, if we lose the competitiveness, as was quite correctly pointed out, then we're setting it up for failure. And we can't afford, with our limited agricultural, South Africa is a country with limited agricultural resources. But I still believe that South Africa can feed up to 150 million people. But then we've got to maintain the technological advantages that we have, the competitive advantages, etc. On the question of the cultural issues, it's one of the things that we also researched to a certain point through our technical task team and while we prepared for this framework. But what's interesting is that people in the communal areas, the farmers in the communal areas, say they don't act, it's not just the chiefs that's the problem. The people don't want title of their land. That's by far the overwhelming feedback that we got. They said, because I might face a drought year or two, and I'll go bankrupt and I'll lose my land. But if I don't have title, I don't have something that I can lose. And it's an approach for a very small farmer that there's some merit. So actually, if you view it from a market-driven approach, it means that by and large, a lot of the small farmers in communal areas are still risk-averse. And that's why we formulated it in such a way and said we must also take race out of the approach to land reform, so that the people in communal areas who are not risk-averse can also start developing. Because I believe if that development takes place, and let's not force the issue of property rights just from the start. Eventually, we've got to move there, because that will enhance competitiveness, and we've got to be competitive. And that's why we incidentally, maybe I should come back to that. But once people start taking risk and becoming less risk averse, because it's not just, we see it as a cultural thing, but it's actually a sound economic approach given the circumstances in the communal areas. But if you can get it right, then some people start taking risks. I believe that the chiefs will eventually, and the communal leaders, will eventually realize that this is development that's coming to the communal areas, and they will start supporting it. But the other way around, the top-down approach is not going to work. I firmly believe it is not going to work. I've seen it through our research that we've done in a very short space of time, and I appreciate that you also said, you know, you also had other approaches. That was very similar to what we agreed on, that government should do the restitution and the land transfer and that we should assist in training new farmers. And that's why we support the National Development Plan, especially Chapter 6 as far as agriculture is regarded, and Outcome 7 of the National Development Plan as well. Because we don't see it, you know, as a capitalist plan. South Africa is not a capitalist country, and I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from the African approach as well. But if you want to be competitive internationally, you've got to adhere to a market-driven approach. Otherwise, you'll simply become uncompetitive, and the market will force you out of business internationally. Because countries might be lenient among their own people, but not to other people from other countries. There you've got to be competitive, and that actually dictates a market-driven approach, as the quite rightly was formulated within the National Development Plan. You might call it the ANC a conservative. They've also told me that we might call them liberal, because we see liberal as rather the adherence to market forces and being in competitive internationally. You know, that's a more liberal approach. Conservative might be to say, no, government will look after you and you don't have to wake up early and go to sleep late at night, and we'll look after you. That might be more conservative, but it simply won't work.
Well, you seem to be agreeing with each other on most of these things. And I think a lot of ordinary South Africans would be quite surprised about the direction this discussion took tonight. Why are we struggling to project this sort of sentiment to the rest of the country?
No, I learned something at the Congress. That sometimes there could be a disjuncture between what leaders think and what the membership thinks. I thought the Congress, the AgriSA Congress, was run by the president very well, because I think the membership had taken responsibility over that Congress. That was my assessment. That's what was exciting about the Congress. It's the same with us, as I said earlier on. It took us to go to the Lekgotla to get the policies we wanted adopted. As long as the leaders were speaking in the media, they were saying, they remember, they were saying, no, it's not ANC policy, blah, blah, blah. But that's exactly what happened at the Congress. That's exactly what happened at the Lekgotla of the ANC. So what the point I'm making is that what leaders say sometimes, it does not always represent what the membership do. I was very satisfied with my observation there that the president of AgriSA got a clear mandate from the membership to move the land reform program forward. I got the same, and I'm happy. On the 20th, let's come together. Let's see what is it that we're going to produce at the end of the day, so that we can then say to South Africans, this is what we think should be done by the country in terms of land reform. Now, we have put forward proposals which are very important to the membership of the governing party. Same with the Congress. So let's see how we can, by the end of March, because what we want to agree on the 20th in the main is a process that will calibrate something that will speak to what we think, both of us, what we think is best for the country, especially based on the National Development Plan. And that is why over the last few months, as Mr. Engelbrecht was saying, over the last 6-7 months, the national development has really come to the fore. The outcome 7, even outcomes, all of the outcomes, the medium-term strategic framework of government is mainly based on the national development plan. So it is becoming a common basis for thinking about South Africa's economy. It is becoming that. So once we all adopted it, in my view, and start implementing it, things will change. Things will change for the better. There will, however, be, I still think, there will still be these challenges of redistribution. That challenge of redistribution remains. We must find a way of resolving that question of redistribution. Now, we have the president signed into law a bill, the Special Planning and Land Use Management Act. Now, that law is going to assist us in terms of land use planning and so on, and ensure that nobody grabs land, blah blah blah. There's a law now. There's going to be a law which will also apply in rural areas. I mean, in communal land areas. So, traditional leaders, municipalities, etc., we are going to have to use this law so that we could protect the land as well, so that there's more land for agriculture, so that you don't find people just occupying land, agricultural land, putting up shacks there. So that's what you see. You saw what you saw in the Free State. They pulled them down. We're hoping that that's going to be, we must protect the agricultural land in order to ensure that there's food security over the next 50 years, or there's capacity to produce food over the next 50 years. So the question of redistribution is primary. We still have to deal with that question, all of us. All of us. It's not just government. It's all of us. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? Lastly, I hope we will agree that there's, even though competitiveness is critical for export and so on, we should agree as well that there is a place for the small farmer. There is a place for the small farmer. So the reason why we think we should create market in the homeland areas, some markets which perhaps could be regarded as primary markets, which could fit into the secondary and tertiary markets. But commercial farmers, to ensure that even at that level, they're there to train, to retail, to wholesale, etc. That would be, especially the retiring farmers, they must help us. They must help us. Yes. It will be, and I'm looking forward to that press, that we mobilize the retired farmers to assist to train the young farmers and the upcoming farmers, especially young people.
I think on that positive note, we'll call it a day here. We've overrun time, but we did start a bit late. So, Minister, thank you very much for being so open and so direct on these issues. It certainly gives me hope that there's a basis here for government and the sector itself to move forward on these issues. We started off posing the question is whether government and the farming sector has the capability to to take on the challenges confronting us on rural development and land reform. By listening to you and by listening to Mr. Engelbrecht and Mr. Moller here, it sounds to me that with a bit of political will all round, anything can happen. And that indeed we are at a place or at a point where one can say, okay, this process can move forward in a very assertive manner. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us tonight. Thank you. And taking now the time to be with us.
Thank you very much.